Hello, and welcome to this special episode of The REIT Report, part of an ongoing series on the journey the real estate industry is on to reduce carbon emissions in the built environment to zero. I'm Jessica Long, NAREIT's SVP for Environmental Stewardship and Sustainability. Joining me today is Duane Desiderio, the Senior Vice President and Counsel for the Real Estate Roundtable. The Real Estate Roundtable brings together leaders of the nation's top publicly held and privately owned real estate owners, developers, lending and management firms, with leaders in major national real estate trade associations to jointly address key national policy issues relating to real estate and the overall economy. Duane leads the Sustainable Policy Advisory Committee, which has focused on climate policy in the U.S. for a number of years. Welcome, Duane.
Thank you, Jess. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
So as a former member, I've had the pleasure of spending a lot of time participating in real estate roundtable meetings. And now in the past few months since joining NAREIT, you and I have been working together on a number of issues supporting our shared members around climate and sustainability issues. For our listeners joining us today that are not as familiar with the work of Real Estate Roundtable, can you share a little bit on what you guys do and why energy and climate matters are so important to Real Estate Roundtable members?
Yes, absolutely, Jess. So just a bit of background on RER, the Real Estate Roundtable. So we are a CEO-level organization. So our primary members of RER are the CEOs and other senior executives of the nation's top commercial real estate lending, development, financing, services, construction firms across all asset classes of commercial real estate. And when one of our CEO members joins the roundtable, they can then designate their content experts on their staff, also in senior roles that might sit on our various policy setting committees. So we have a policy committee for tax, a policy committee for capital markets, an equity, diversity, and inclusion committee, a homeland security committee, and also, just as you mentioned, our SPAC, our Sustainability Policy Advisory Committee. And SPAC, Jess, is a former esteemed member of SPAC, and now we are trade association colleagues working on policy. But our SPAC is comprised primarily of the ESG, the chief sustainability officers, the senior executives at the nation's top real estate companies that manage energy and climate programs for the real estate companies that build the homes where we live, the offices where we work, the hospitals where we heal, the hotels and retail where we spend our free time. So we cover all asset classes of commercial real estate in that regard. And on our SPAC, as you mentioned, why do we care? We've been at this for quite some time. I think it is fair to say, though, that within the last 4 to 5 years, and certainly since the Biden administration took office at the federal level, the pace at which we have seen federal policy and federal laws now start to coalesce about greening the built environment, whether that is our buildings, whether that is the electric grid, it's kind of been at a feverish pace. We had a bipartisan infrastructure law that passed that didn't so much focus on buildings, but there was a lot of attention in there on greening the electric grid. Then a year ago, we had the Inflation Reduction Act that offered a suite of incentives, grants, loans, and I think in particular for our industry, tax incentives geared that could help make commercial real estate. Their various audiences demand it. Their investors, investment companies will have their own environmentally responsible and socially responsible investment goals. So investment companies want to invest in real estate assets that are clean, that are green, that are healthy. We'll talk a little bit about this today too, in terms of public companies in particular that have reporting requirements and reporting obligations to their shareholders, a heavy emphasis on policies to report and disclose climate and energy-related impacts. So for a variety of reasons, we have certainly seen climate policy become a more heightened priority given the responsibilities and priorities of the current presidential administration to make sure that groups like RER, working with you and our colleagues at NAREIT and our other real estate groups, are at the fore of all of these policy developments so we can keep our members apprised and abreast of all that's happening in the space.
Yeah, it's really a lot. And it's so interesting, as you mentioned, you know, a CEO-driven organization, advocacy on behalf of the real estate industry. And as a sustainability person working at a real estate company for many years, these issues started out very kind of low level, boots on the ground, where we're just saving dollars and cents on the energy bill or talking to tenants about this or that. But really now, like, it really has changed as far as this is rising to the C-suite level. and the policy aspect is so much more important. I think as business people, we kind of shy away from getting involved in policy too much. And we say, okay, we're just going to stick to the business. But participation in groups like Real Estate Roundtable have really shown, especially for sustainability leaders, why it's so important to consider where this is going. Because I think a number of years ago, we were all talking about the potential for regulation. And now we're sitting here kind of right in the middle of a lot of different issues all coming together at once.
Yeah, 100%, Jess. I know you and I personally, right? But our colleagues, we have been at this for quite some time. And it's always been discussed in the C-suite, but it has just taken on heightened importance. And I think there are a few recent reasons for that. One, as you mentioned, is this trend of regulation, primarily regulations that we've seen now crop up at the state and local level, not so much at the federal level, but mandates on buildings that we are seeing as a result of local laws that are passed by city councils or by virtue of city ordinances, where if a building doesn't meet its climate target or its efficiency target, a fine might be imposed upon it. Okay, that's going to get the attention of the C-suite. And then, as we have also seen and as we mentioned, for some of our companies that have reporting responsibilities to their shareholders and are registered with the SEC, when the SEC proposed a landmark proposal last year to require companies to report on their financial risks related to climate impacts, that garnered a lot of attention from the C-suite. And then, as also we mentioned, the Inflation Reduction Act, nothing grabs the attention more of senior accountants, senior lawyers, and chief executives than a tax incentive and a tax credit. And when the Inflation Reduction Act passed a suite of incentives that were marrying fiscal policy and tax policy with climate policy, that also has garnered the attention of the senior executives in our companies. So it is this confluence that has come together, which all has a huge impact on the incredibly competitive market for capital in the U.S. and globally. It's the bringing together and the emerging of all these trends at the same time that I think have really garnered the attention of the C-suite in real estate, as it didn't even 4 or 5 years ago.
I think that's exactly right. And one of the things that I love about what I do and how my career has kind of evolved within the real estate industry, but then also as a sustainability professional in real estate, is that sense of community. While real estate is such a competitive industry and you're always kind of out there looking for the next deal, looking for the next tenant, competing in so many ways, there's also this sense of community as far as speaking from the same kind of and moving in the same direction, I should say, on these sustainability matters. And I think that really is kind of a testament to why the real estate industry has come so far. And it was an early adopter of sustainability in a lot of the things that we've been working on, is because there was this understanding that we're in this together. The building that I own today, my peer may own next week, and another company may be lending on or insuring on. And we have this stakeholder mindset kind of inherently built into the real estate industry. So I know one of the things you and I have been working closely together, we also bring a lot of the different trade associations as well as all of our members into these discussions. What is the kind of importance around kind of speaking from that unified voice when talking about sustainability issues, especially as it relates to kind of policy and advocacy?
Yeah, it's a great question. The importance of trying to sing from the same song sheet, especially in an industry that can be as diverse and varied as ours, right? Across asset types, across geographies, across markets. That's not an easy thing to do, right? To try to get everybody together on the same page for policy. But when we can do it, and when that is achievable, it sends a strong and powerful message to policymakers, so that the policymakers are not hearing all of these discordant and sometimes disparate viewpoints from members of our own industry. So NAREIT and RER, and as you said, with our other real estate organizations, we coordinate quite frequently so that where we can, and that there are overarching policies that can apply and be used and useful to all of the asset classes of commercial real estate, regardless of market, sends a very strong and powerful message. It was interesting, again, back to the SEC a year ago, which I think really spurred the SEC's proposed rule. Incidentally, we are expecting a final rule from the SEC sometime this fall. We shall see when that comes out, whenever that does ultimately issue, that is going to create quite a stir. But this is now going back 18 months or so when RER was coordinating with NAREIT and other groups to draft our policy and our comment on the proposed rule. It wasn't something that just, of course, impacted the real estate sector. It affects all economic sectors. And in a number of inter-association conversations that I was part of that cut across industries, it was actually heartening. And frankly, it changed my perspective a little bit. Our industry on a lot of these issues, on climate measurement, on the importance of it, we're a lot more unified than some other industries, not to call any of those out. But I'll give like one example. While we still have a lot that we need to work on, the fact that our industry has a basic reporting, management, and benchmarking tool that all buildings can use, that is offered by the federal government, that is rather well developed at this point, is something that other industries do not have. And here I'm talking about the Environmental Protection Agency's Energy Star Program Portfolio Manager tool. So for those who are members of SPAC and RESC at NAREIT, your environmental committee, we are deep into the weeds of what Portfolio Manager is and how long now that has been offered by the EPA. But for the uninitiated, it is basically the TurboTax for energy and climate management. It's a free online tool that the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency has offered now for a number of years that allows building owners across asset classes to measure and manage energy consumption that can lead to the calculation of their emissions, their water consumption, and their waste use, right? This is a tool that EPA offers available online. To the best of my knowledge, similar tools are not available as Portfolio Manager is for buildings and real estate. That's not available for other industries. So while we still have a number of challenges ahead of us, the fact that we just even have a basic common setting tool in Portfolio Manager helps us advocate and helps us try to push for more standards and more guidelines that can help cut across the crazy patchwork of regulations that we're seeing. And then that also allows us to build upon Portfolio Manager. And we have a pretty cooperative relationship with EPA. This tool is evolving. The Portfolio Manager tool is not the same tool it was 10 years ago. But as we're seeing, as we mentioned, all of these state and local building performance standards that are being emerged, and this push for industries and companies, not just in real estate, but certainly in real estate, to strive for net zero emissions, whatever that means, we have been working cooperatively with EPA to move Portfolio Manager in that direction so it evolves to keep pace with these trends. So in that regard, just that we have this common standard tool is helpful for our industry, perhaps in a way that doesn't exist for other industries. They're a little bit more disparate. We're able to rally, I think, a little bit better around a common theme.
I couldn't agree more. EPA Energy Star Portfolio Manager was an important part of the early part of my journey, getting started in sustainability. It's a free tool offered by the U.S. government. I think it not only sets us apart as a real estate industry to other sectors, but also globally. This is a tool that the U.S. real estate industry has that doesn't exist in other countries. So really understanding how this is used, again, not only to kind of benchmark, but then to set goals and to understand where we're going regionally by sector. There's so many ways to slice and dice the data to look at really what is happening when it comes to buildings and energy use and carbon emissions and tie that all together. So you guys have been instrumental at Real Estate Roundtable in communicating to the EPA on what the building community needs. And I think they've been really responsive in coming back and making those adjustments and changes and planning for the future. I know that recently the Commercial Buildings Program announced additional enhancements to the program with funds from the IRA. Now I think are really going to continue to take it to the next level for the U.S. real estate community.
Yeah, when Portfolio Manager started, right, it was initially just focused as an energy usage and energy consumption benchmarking and tracking tool. And now with so much of the emphasis at the policy level, as you mentioned, coming from abroad, right, but also domestically at the local level, focused on emissions reduction, one of the major enhancements that we're seeing to Portfolio Manager is the ability now to track and measure and forecast future emissions. So not just simply energy consumption and how you might reduce your energy usage over time, but how that can then also then correlate to reducing emissions and calculating emissions over time, because that's where the focus has been at the policy level. So kudos to EPA for doing what they can to now evolve Portfolio Manager to also offer an emissions calculation and tracking and forecasting tool. And a lot of this stuff, right? I mean, it's more art than science. Calculating your emissions depends on what's known as a conversion factor. How do you convert various fuels that you consume in terms of your energy, which the carbon intensity of various fuels needs to be converted to emissions? And you can pull numbers out of the air in terms of what those factors are. EPA has some pretty clear guidelines on how you can customize your emissions factors into this tool. That can be an emissions factor that a local grid operator that can give you. It can be a federal emissions factor that also comes from the EPA, something known as eGrid. But you're able to customize your emissions calculations with this new tool for a variety of different purposes. It might be for the purposes of state and local law compliance. So if you're in a jurisdiction with a building performance standard that has a mandate on your building to reduce carbon emissions, and that state or local law has ensconced in it, as some do, a carbon emissions factor, you can take that carbon emissions factor, put it in EPA's federal tool, and help get a sense of where you are in compliance with that law. Similarly, if a company might enter into a power purchase agreement with a utility to purchase more clean power for its grid region, and as part of that purchase, the utility or the electricity supplier in that region gives the company a carbon conversion factor for its electricity, you can take that grid-supplied carbon conversion factor and plop that into EPA's tool as well. So it varies. So it has multiple uses and multiple purposes for reporting for compliance. This is a relatively new offering from EPA, and we're going to continue to work with EPA and our members so they can test drive this, make sure it works. In the same regard, we've spent a lot of time this summer not simply just focused on federal policy, but rather NGO standards that purport to set international and global standards for carbon emissions or reaching net zero. And an emerging part of these discussions is how does one factor in what are known as renewable energy certificates that might get to the point where a company wants to get to net zero, it wants its buildings portfolio to get to net zero, but it just might be in a downtown urban area and can't deploy renewable or solar panels on site. Its location just might not be conducive to that. So the other options it has really is to go offsite and to purchase clean power offsite. And how do you track that through something known as a REC, a renewable energy certificate? Well, we're heartened from some messaging from EPA that this portfolio manager tool will allow and improve for improved and better tracking of these RECs, renewable energy certificates, so that they're not double counted, so that this offsite emissions are verified by third parties and they're true and actual. It would not just be greenwashing. So to have EPA help provide a tool for our industry to develop standards for tracking verifiable third party renewable energy certificates, it's the wave of the future, or maybe not the future, but we're on the cusp of it. But these are the tools that we need right now. And to your point, it's like, I think globally in some circles, maybe the U.S. gets a bum rap for all that the federal government and all the federal policies we do have in place to help our economy decarbonize and to help buildings in particular lower their carbon emissions. To my knowledge, there's not something similar to Portfolio Manager that does all this abroad in Europe or in Asia.
I see us at this kind of crucial point in time. And I thinking about a lot of these reporting issues and thinking about carbon accounting and what that really means. And I always try and like think about what's the financial equivalent of this, right? What is the FASB standard or the GAAP accounting, right? Like those frameworks and kind of guidance exist for a reason, right? Because the financial markets needed that to be able to operate. And I think we're at this point in time where the carbon market and the carbon accounting is still just maturing to the point where we now recognize that without these guidelines and standards, it's very hard to produce a report that's comparable and decision useful. So it's a really exciting time. And I do think that through the work, the long history of the work that's been done and the kind of future-looking approach is really kind of pinpointing the key things that are going to have the biggest impact. And I do agree that the collaboration across our industry, the collaboration with federal agencies, say an Energy Star, really are kind of moving this in the right direction and quickly for the real estate industry. You mentioned building performance standards and local regulations several times, and this is a hot button issue. I know when I joined NAREIT, it was one of the things that the members brought up to me as important things that they want us to work on. The Real Estate Roundtable is really a federal advocacy group, but why has kind of getting involved and kind of having these state and local regulations been on your radar for a number of years, and where do you see that as it fits into the policy landscape?
Great question. The reason that state and local building performance standards, BPS, has been on our radar is certainly because our members are putting it on our radar. The reality is, at least for private sector owned buildings, the politics are not aligned in Congress that we are going to get a federal building performance standard on private sector buildings anytime soon. We can debate whether that's a good idea or a bad idea. It just is the reality. The planets are not aligned with divided leadership in Congress that we will see mandates at the federal level on private sector owned buildings to reduce carbon emissions or to reduce energy consumption. As a side, right? Federally owned buildings are now subject to a federal building performance standard. And if you are a privately owned building that leases space to a federal entity, you want to be tracking what's going on in terms of a federal building performance standard that has come out of the White House Council on Environmental Quality with input from the General Services Administration. You want to focus on that. But there's no federal mandate per se on private sector owned buildings, but states and localities are picking up steam here. Not all states and localities. Again, you can't discuss this particular issue without also getting into politics a little bit. So for lack of a better phrase, some of the blue states and blue jurisdictions, right? Some of the cities that have more Democratic leadership as opposed to Republican leadership are looking very seriously into adopting building performance standards, mandates on buildings. It's not just a one-off situation anymore. The White House itself has convened a national building performance standards coalition of these various states and localities that have committed to BIPs on buildings by Earth Day of next year. So because the fact that this is not a one-off situation, the White House is now involved, and we are hearing from our members, how do I make sure if I have a nationwide portfolio, how do I know if what I'm doing in New York is subject to the same rules as in California, which might be subject to the same rules in Boulder, Colorado? We're doing what we can at a federal level, recognizing that there will not be a federal mandate, to work with EPA, the Department of Energy, the administration, to help set at least some federal standards and federal guidelines that states and localities might then adopt to bring some rationality to this space, to ease the compliance obligations for our members to just measure and manage their emissions. One of the key points here, for example, you and I have had a number of discussions about this recently. We are anticipating that the federal government will develop and propose for the first time a definition within the coming weeks of what does it mean for a building to be net zero? What does a net zero building mean? So there's no mandate at the federal level to do this. There's no authorization from Congress, and the administration would exceed its authority if it told a private sector building it has to be net zero. But this is happening at the state and local level. We've encouraged some guideline to bring some rationality to the space that might cut across the murk. And so we're anticipating that the federal government might, in fact, set a voluntary guideline at the federal level in terms of defining what a net zero building means. So that's about as high a federal policy issue in the climate and energy space that we could get to right now. We'll see if the feds do, in fact, propose such a standard. But if and when they do, that will trigger a public comment period that I know you and I will be coordinating with our shared and respective members, as well as across other real estate groups. To, again, the point we were discussing earlier, I think if we are all on a common point in terms of sending a unified industry message on what we think works and what our members believe net zero means for a building across asset classes, we have a much better chance of success in shaping that definition in a way that is useful and meaningful, as opposed to if we're all scurrying about and sending a different message.
And I think that real estate owners A lot of our members are not only own buildings here in the U.S., but own buildings globally and have a lot to contribute to the discussion about what's happening around the world, how these definitions of net zero really kind of are at the crux of what we're trying to do. When somebody says you must disclose your climate-related risk, and that risk is what is it going to cost to bring your building up to a low carbon standard? Well, how can you answer that question without knowing what is the standard that you're trying to meet? Right. It's like, it's just so important and so at the center of everything we do. I remember at one point in my career, we were talking about setting targets and we were measuring our year over year reductions. And somebody said to me, well, we can't just reduce forever. At some point, have we met our goal? And it's like, well, energy wise. And really, it's like, yeah, that goal is zero, right? We're getting to zero. We're moving towards zero. But how do you define zero?
Right.
And I think that's like a question that as we get closer to it, we're going to get more and more information that comes out of groups like Energy Star with the data that's telling us what the median and the 25th percentile and all of these things, but also how that those calculations are coming together over time. So I think it's one of these places where it all kind of comes together. We mentioned the local performance standards, and now we're really looking at how this all comes together into business decision useful information, standard reporting, standard measurements, and policy that works to achieve the goal that we're all trying to move towards, which is really kind of mitigating climate change and reducing carbon in the built environment.
Right, 100%.
Yeah. Well, anything else on your mind that you want to talk about?
Well, I think as we're kind of wrapping up here, we have a busy fall ahead of us. Just kind of, I'm looking at my list here of the items that we are anticipating to come down at the federal level before the end of this year is quite daunting. So we'll see again whether all this happens. But we are expecting sometime this fall the SEC to propose its final rule. We are expecting the administration to propose a definition of what net zero building means. We are expecting the IRS and the Treasury Department to propose regulations for how existing building owners might be able to tap into and qualify for the 179D tax deduction for retrofits, a new path that was created by Congress last year. The Science-Based Targets Initiative, SBTI, we're expecting their building sector-specific guidelines to be issued this fall. You and I spent a lot of hours back in January commenting on that proposal. We're also expecting the administration to come out with some guidelines as to how various federal agency loan and loan guarantee programs might be able to assist conversion projects. So a hot topic right now in our industry, how might an underutilized office building convert to a residential building, a multifamily building that clearly has energy and climate implications, right? That's a major retrofit. And such a rehab of such a building can be done in a way that reduces the emissions and the embodied carbon that's in the construction materials, as well as improve the operational emissions in that asset going forward. Well, we understand that there are going to be some guidelines coming from the federal government and how certain loan and loan guarantee programs might assist those projects. So we have a lot to work on over the next couple of months. I'm really glad you're at NAREIT. You're a great collaborator and a great partner to like think these things through with, and our work is cut out for us, but I'm looking forward to it.
I couldn't agree more. I really appreciate learning from you as I enter this trade association and more of the advocacy work. So it's great, and I'm really looking forward to the busy fall and the work, important work that we'll be doing. So thank you. Thank you for joining us today and for everything you do all year for the industry.
Thank you, Jess.
If you enjoyed this discussion and are interested in learning more about REIT sustainability, check out NAREIT.com/sustainability. And we look forward to continuing to bring you insights that help better understand how building owners are working with key stakeholders to address climate risk and decarbonize the built environment. If you enjoyed this episode of REIT Report, you subscribe or leave a review wherever you access your podcasts.